and Brush.
Wow.
You need an army.
On the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
There is one main question.
Why are you guys on the ice?
Yes. But also, how can the Canucks win the Stanley Cup?
Go off, young king.
What? Record levels almost of house positivity. What?
Go off.
Yeah.
What?
You know, for some of these agents and things, if they have UFAs, they kind of say, okay, we got to get that takes priority at this time. So, like I said, I heard some rumors today that it was getting close. I got pushback on it. We'll see if it goes anywhere.
I'd be lying to you guys if I didn't say there was, you know, a lot of thoughts about people who, you know, never thought I'd play in the NHL or never make it, you know, this far or, you know, be able to, you know, sign a long-term deal in the NHL. But yeah, there was a little enjoyment in that.
No injury, thankfully, and that's why I took a step back because I didn't want to do something silly out there and get injured. So I thought it was best if these girls took over and did the rest of the job, which they absolutely did. They're Olympic silver medalists now, and they should be really proud of themselves for how well they did last minute having to go in.
Here are your hosts, Mike Alford and Jason Brough.
Good morning, Vancouver. 6:01 on a Wednesday. Happy Free Agent Frenzy Day, everybody. It is Halford. It is Brough. It is Sportsnet 650, and we are coming to you live from the Sportsnet 650 studios in beautiful Fairview Slopes in Vancouver. Jason, how are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great. I'm really excited for today.
Nephew Dom, how are you?
I'm all right.
This is good energy, fellas. I'm loving it. We got producer Josh in the house as well. He doesn't have a microphone, or does he?
I do.
Oh, look at this. What a show. The three of us, the four of us, riding together into the beginning of Free Agent Frenzy. Things are not yet underway. We have yet to have a signing as of this morning, but there's plenty of news to get into over what happened yesterday and then hopefully what's going to happen today. What's happening on the program today? We only have two guests as we walk you through the Frenzy. Sportsnet's very own Chris Johnson, NHL insider, is going to join us at 7. I got a feeling he might be busy today. Siege might have a few things on the go today.
The insiders were up early tweeting. My alarm went off at around 5 in the morning, and I grabbed my phone, and I'm like, all right, I'll see what's going on. Dhaliwal's already busy. There's a bunch of stuff out. That Drance and Dhaliwal had a terrific article that just posted on The Athletic. Tons of information, including a quote from Michael Ferland, who pretty much guaranteed that he's done playing hockey.
So Chris Johnson at 7 o'clock as we go around the league, slowly leading into what should be a very frenzied day, hence the name Free Agent Frenzy. We've worked these shows before in the morning on Free Agency Day. Usually, things start kicking off. I mean, it's a rough estimate on time, but around 7:30.
I thought you were going to say right after we're off the air.
As soon as we are done with our radio program, that is when things get interesting. No, it's usually around 7:30. You'll start getting the rumblings of deals in pocket, deals that have been signed. But that's fine because we've got two guests. Jeff Pat is going to join us at 8 o'clock to talk all things Canucks. It'll be Jeff Pat's final hit with us as he takes the summer off and then moves into his new full-time role as an insider for Sakaris and Price. So Jeff Pat at 8, Chris Johnston at 7. We will keep you abreast of everything that's going on in and around the league. I'm sure there'll be plenty of breaking news buttons. We will go back and look at everything that happened yesterday as well. It's going to be a very busy day. Dom has left the studio. Josh has jumped into the big chair. Do you want to throw him on the spot right now? Because he's going to be working with us for the rest of the week. Dom's going en vacances.
Okay, how will we throw him on the spot?
We have to tell everybody what happened. Do you know what happens when we say what happened?
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No.
What happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened?
Missed it?
You missed that?
What happened?
Good start. Good start, buddy. Big thumbs
attaboy,
up from Josh.
Attaboy, attaboy.
You're already improving what we had in the booth. He's gone. He can't hear us. Don't worry about it. We will begin. God, I didn't know how to put these in order because there were so many things that happened with the Canucks yesterday. So let's just go chronologically. The first thing that happened yesterday, you heard it right here, breaking news on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Braden Holtby bought out of the final year of his contract.
Okay, so what that did was clear a bunch of cap space. Mm-hmm. Yes, it kicks some of the cap space to next season, but that's a problem for next season.
Don't worry about that.
The Canucks now need to find a backup goalie. So who is that going to be? lots of speculation and some reporting that it's going to be Jaro Halak,
right?
Who is a veteran goalie, a real veteran goalie. This guy goes back. This guy was around. He was a young goalie when he Halaked the Washington Capitals back in 2010. You remember that series? Yeah, it was a long time ago. It was like a whole. There's so many storylines that have developed since then, including Alex Ovechkin getting his Stanley Cup. But that was the year that the Washington Capitals were supposed to do some damage. And then in the first round, Jaro Halak was brilliant. Not Carey Price. Jaro Halak for the Montreal Canadiens was brilliant. The Montreal Canadiens went on a bit of a Cinderella run. Fast forward 11 years, and Halak's been through a lot. Most recently, with the Boston Bruins, is it?
Yes, he spent the last three seasons with the Boston Bruins. Now, I will say this about Halak, in keeping with the theme of kicking the can down the road, the Canucks could, theoretically, because he's over the age of 35, and he turned 36 in May, they would be able to sign him to a deal. I won't get into the minutiae of the CBA and how these contracts are drawn up, but essentially, they can laden it with bonuses that would minimize some of the financial damage and, again, kick something over to next year. Nothing has been done as of yet. We're waiting on final word on what that situation is going to look like in goal. But again, according to multiple insiders, including the Athletic's Pierre LeBrun, it does sound as though Halak is one of the favorites for Vancouver's backup job. It also sounds as though Tampa Bay is interested in Halak as well, though.
How confident would we be with Jaro Halak in goal? When he went to Boston, he had really good numbers in his first year and his second year.
Yep.
Last year, obviously a bit of a weird year, but his numbers were not very good. He was a 905 save percentage on a team that I don't think has a ton of defensive issues. Tuukka Rask managed to put up some pretty good numbers last year for the Boston Bruins. Halak is 36 years old.
Yep.
And again, for the millionth time, I will say that if the Canucks don't get good play from their backup goaltender, if the backup goaltender is a liability, it creates problems. This team probably isn't going to be good enough to just run the table and be like, ah, that doesn't matter about our goalie. We're fine with just anyone in there, even if he's not very good, because we dominate so thoroughly. That's not the Canucks. It also puts Thatcher Demko in a tough position of, hey, you got to play a bunch of games now because we don't trust our backup goalie. So, look, there's questions about any goalie that's going to be brought in, especially with the constraints that the Canucks have. Like, they can't go out there and spend as much money as they want on a goalie. But if it is Jaro Halak, does he have a good overall body of work? Absolutely.
And he's done this before, played in that sort of the 1B to the 1A. Because again, you look at his time in Boston. Yes, he was the backup to Tuukka Rask, unquestionably. But because Rask had some health issues, and remember, he left the playoff bubble in 2020, Halak ended up playing a pretty significant number of games. So he played 31 in the shortened season that led to the bubble, and then played 9 games in the bubble. He played 19 last year in another shortened season. So at the very least, you can say with confidence, he can handle a workload and has had experience of playing the kind of role that the Canucks would need him to play. Now, don't get me wrong.
Any concern about his age?
I mean,
eventually goalies
become too
old.
I was just going to get to that. The rub here is that it's pretty clear that this is a marriage of convenience because of the age and what you can do contractually.
Yeah.
Also, the third thing I'd throw out here, I think he might end up being one of the better options in a class that isn't great. If you look at the goalie market right now, it's quantity over quality. There's not a ton of... Like, could you pick a guy at random and say this would maybe be a significantly better fit than Halak? I'd push back and say I doubt it. Maybe you find
not
a guy...
Not at that price.
That's the thing. So while maybe there's a better guy for the fit, but you also have to remember that they're working under constraints now. The Canucks are working under a lot of constraints right now, right? They are moving pieces and moving out salary and tiptoeing the line with about 5 different things that need to get done. So in that regard, I'm thinking I'm okay with Halak, but don't get me wrong. I see exactly where you're coming from because the numbers in Boston went the wrong way. The save percentage went down.
Yeah, as he got older.
As he got older. And the age, 36, went up, right? I mean, it's not a good sort of curve in that regard.
I will also say, and you kind of mentioned this yesterday, that there is a wild card in all this, and that's Michael DiPietro, who could theoretically, if he's playing well, and we don't know what Michael DiPietro is going to look like next season because he barely played last season. So he's going to need some time to ramp up in Abbotsford. I'm going to say Utica a bunch of times. What are we calling them? What do we call them? The baby Canucks? Is that, that's what the other... Because, like, if we do the Canucks, you know? At any rate, we'll worry about that later.
Yeah, about
Michael
that later.
DiPietro could always be an option to call up if the Canucks don't have faith in their backup goalie and Thatcher Demko needs a rest. Let's move on.
Do you want to hear some audio from Woodley, or do you just want to move on entirely from the... Did we do a thorough job of breaking down the Braden Holtby buyout?
Let's do it later.
Okay. We will go now to the Nate Schmidt trade. We'll put Connor Garland on the back burner for a sec. Nate Schmidt... on his way to Winnipeg. That happened yesterday afternoon. The exchange, a third-round pick, which not coincidentally is what the Canucks gave up last summer to acquire Schmidt from the Vegas Golden Knights. 4 years left on a deal with a $5.95 million cap hit. Once again, we talk about the Canucks working within confines, working within the margins, being pressed up against it. Josh, we have the Elliot Friedman audio on this. I will warn you ahead of time. Dom told me that it sounds like Elliot recorded this from a subway tunnel, so the audio might not be the best quality, but he does explain once again how everything the Canucks are doing right now is about getting cap freedom and financial availability.
Well, isn't that what the Canucks got him for?
Yep, exactly. Yeah. It's a neutral move.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, basically it's a neutral move, and, you know, you're right. It is all about the salary. Like, Vancouver wanted to move it out. You know, it's funny. I've been having this this conversation today about should the Canucks be paranoid about a Pettersson offer sheet. You know, we all know they're going to match it, but it could really put them into a position where they'd be stuck. And for, you know, I think I've gotten various arguments about whether or not it would or would not happen, but there's generally a feeling that the Canucks are at least worried about it. So... I think they push to create more flexibility. They would have to do it anyway, but, you know, the fact that they did it, you know, they did a lot of work this week. They got Garland done. They got this trade done. I think it lends credence to the fact that at least the Canucks had felt that there was a reason to be concerned about it, and they wanted to be aggressive in getting some of this work done.
Okay, before we get to the Pettersson situation and the potential offer sheet there, essentially, the Canucks got a refund for Nate Schmidt. Does that like they they had him for a year and then they were like, you know what, not really happy with it.
That's exactly what they did.
We're gonna send him back, get our money back, or in the case a third round pick.
Yeah, it's exactly what they did. It's like, I think there used to be a scam at Costco where you could buy a TV and then keep it for a year and then return it.
Oh, they did
for
that.
A newer model, but they didn't get a new model back. They just got their cash back.
Dom is giving the thumbs up there.
You can do that?
Did Dom do that?
Are you taking today off, by the way? What's going on here?
I'm training on Joshua.
You look like you're half asleep.
This looks like how everyone is trained at 6:50. You half asleep in the chair. And the young, enthusiastic guy doing all the work. That's good.
And so panicking.
Tell me, is that still a thing at Costco?
I did it like 2 years ago. I did that.
Yeah, so you can keep it. And I think you have to exchange it for product.
No, I got my money back.
What a scam. The Canucks pulled a Costco.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Nate Schmidt finally relents and goes, fine, I'll go to Winnipeg. And there was already talk that, you know, he was sold by
Paul Stastny, former teammate with the Vegas Golden Knights.
And Nate Schmidt's a Minnesota guy, so he knows about cold, dark winters, and, you know, the weather probably won't faze Nate Schmidt too much.
I think he felt, or the impression that I got from what Stastny sold him on, wasn't necessarily Winnipeg the city. It's like, visit one of our three Earls. It was, you know, we have a chance here.
Mm-hmm.
Because with Dylan and Schmidt added to that defense, and no real losses, to be honest. And their only real loss at the expansion draft was Mason Appleton, the apple of Thomas Drantz's eye.
They might lose Derek Forbert.
Right, and that would be a stunning loss to the organization. Somehow they would recover. But I think the point would be Nate Schmidt probably sees Winnipeg closer to winning than Vancouver.
Probably.
Yeah.
Certainly after last season.
Right. So that
he sees any team as closer to winning.
That's
with
the
his experience. By the way, Nate Schmidt, we'll talk to the media in Winnipeg today in just a few hours. I doubt he'll spill the tea on what happened in Vancouver. I'm sure he'll dance around that, like most professional athletes do. Mm-hmm. But we'll have to wait and see what he has to say. The Elias Pettersson potential offer sheet, by reading, by what Drantz and Dhaliwal wrote in The Athletic, a lot of the work the Canucks have done in clearing cap space this season, and we all know they have, right? They've cleared a ton of cap space through trades and buyouts. A lot of it was done not just with an eye on improving the team, but kind of as a defensive posture to put themselves in case there's a Pettersson offer sheet. Now, my big question right now is, has it been threatened by the agent? Has it been threatened by the Pettersson camp? Like, have negotiations got to the point where the Pettersson camp has gone, look, we don't seem to be getting anywhere, or there's a big wide gulf here. You know, Jim, we do have other options here.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea. And we'll talk to Chris Johnston about it. We'll talk to Jeff Pat about it. These negotiations, the Canucks are usually pretty good about keeping these negotiations fairly private. There aren't a lot of mm-hmm. leaks about negotiations. Jim Benning doesn't like to talk about negotiations, especially of, you know, club controlled team players. You know, sometimes the leaks come out about potential UFAs, yeah. ones that aren't in the organization. But it also brings up the question for me, and look, it hasn't been done yet, and I don't think it's going to happen, but if Pettersson were to sign an offer sheet that put the Canucks in a tough situation,
mm-hmm.
I just really wonder how that would go over.
Right. I don't see it happening, but there has to be something here for both Drantz and Dhaliwal to have reported as thoroughly and then written as thoroughly about this subject as they did. Because if you go to The Athletic Vancouver, you can check out the piece. There is a lot of content there involving how determined the Canucks were to build up a cushion should Pettersson get an offer sheet. Now, the important thing to note, and you brought this up, is there's nothing as to, well, why do the Canucks feel this way? Why are they so determined to build up that wall? Is it because they're worried about a predatory rival GM lurking in the weeds and popping up? Maybe a general manager has come forward to them. Maybe it's not coming from the Pettersson camp whatsoever. I mean, we do know that all these general managers at times don't really have an adversarial relationship. A lot of times they work in conjunction. Mm-hmm. It's very possible that someone went to Benning and said, here's a heads up, I may be doing this.
Yeah.
Just as a common courtesy professionally. And then the conversation would go to Pettersson. Now, the biggest issue I have with all this is we've spent countless hours on this program, me especially, and you always, and I think rightly so, get on my case about it. You're like, why do you keep doing this? You always get excited by the shiny objects, the baubles, if you will. But I just don't see it happening because it never does.
But now I want to talk about it because it's a Canucks player. Right?
No, that's fair.
Most of the time we talk about it as the Canucks being the aggressors.
Mm-hmm.
And going out and signing an offer sheet on someone and putting another team in a bad position. If I heard, like Eric Cernak's name, I probably heard that like 300 times with relation to an offer sheet. Anyway, it didn't happen because it never does,
mm-hmm.
Which is why I'm assuming it won't happen in this case. But I'll throw it out to the listeners right here. If Pettersson were to sign an offer sheet that put the Canucks in a tough situation, like they were like, now we got to, now we got to unload some contracts elsewhere and it's going to cost us money and like we don't have a lot of time to do this and now we're in a really weak position, would that affect your opinion of Pettersson? Or are you of the camp, and a lot of people are, that Pettersson's got to look out for Pettersson and hockey is a business and sometimes teams treat players in a cold and calculating way?
Mm-hmm.
See Marc-Andre Fleury in Vegas, and you got to get what's yours.
I wouldn't. I really wouldn't. I think I look back. Actually, it's funny because having written about the Ryan Kessler era in Vancouver, you forget that at the early stages, the early onset of that, he signed an offer sheet with the Philadelphia Flyers, right?
Yeah, and Ryan Kessler wasn't always the most beloved Canuck.
But I never held it against him.
Okay.
So that's what
I'm
saying.
But that was also a very minor offer sheet at the time. Ryan Kessler wasn't a big-time player. It didn't put the Canucks in a tough situation. I'm just curious.
Yeah, but it's still the same principle at heart. It's, are you really wanting... I mean, I get what you're... I know what you're getting at. The fundamental point of it is, are you putting the team in a tough spot, and are you essentially saying you want out? And if you are, does a fan base take that into consideration? I'm sure some people will. I'm sure some people will, if it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And this doesn't even go for Pettersson. I think there's some people, probably in Nashville, that are still bitter about the entire Shea Weber experience, because that contract really profoundly messed up the organization in a lot of different ways. Basically cost them, I think, Ryan Suter. That ended up being, you know, kind of part and parcel as they went along. I get that part of it. I really do. But at the same time, I've seen it the other side of the coin where, you know, NHL clubs will bring in a guy, it doesn't happen as often now, but into arbitration. And run them down and cut them down to make sure that the contract doesn't become too spendy. Then turn around and be like, welcome back to the team. All those negative things we said about you, we don't really believe them. They were just a negotiating
tactic. It's a tough conversation, isn't it? Because we've seen how teams can treat players. And I think you and I have often been of the opinion that if you're the general manager of a team, you have to be ruthless at times.
Yes.
To then say to the player, no, you're gonna look after the team.
Well, a perfect example. Look at what just happened with Marc-Andre Fleury in Vegas.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, Fleury, for a Hall of Fame netminder, sure has been treated like junk by that organization on a number of occasions, including on his way out the door. And at some point you say, does loyalty and respect and how you treat people matter? Yes. But also, can you do that and still be like cutthroat and ruthless? Mm-hmm. I don't know. And again, the most recent offer sheet with Aho didn't really seem to affect anything there. Now, I understand the situation and circumstances were a lot different, but it doesn't seem as though Aho and the Hurricanes are in some major, you know, split. Like, there's nothing really damaging there.
Because I will just point out that it didn't really put the Hurricanes in a tough position, right? Like, they had the room, and it was kind of an easy match. It wasn't like, oh, we got to do a bunch of things. Mm-hmm. I think the best comparison would be Shea Weber, where it's like, oh my God, this was an offer sheet clearly designed to get the player out of that market.
And you can't even do those
including
anymore.
The player.
Yeah.
Right? Aho might have just played the Montreal Canadiens
and we'll never
to get a deal done.
And it certainly sounded that way.
Connor Garland signed a 5-year extension, cap hit just under $5 million. I'm excited to watch Connor Garland with the Canucks. You know me, what I like in players is tenacity, competitiveness, and skill. Like, that's what I want.
Do you like compete level?
I hate that phrase. You can just say he tries really hard. He's a trier, you know. Mm. But I think that's the type of player that I want to see in the Canucks lineup.
Right.
On every line. So I want players like Connor Garland. Is he undersized? Yeah. And he still made it, which goes to show you how smart he is as a player and how competitive he is as a player. And the Canucks need more of those guys.
So the deal is a 5-year contract, $4.95 million AAV. I did my own analysis of the contract. I thought it was a pretty fair deal for both sides. That seemed to be the general consensus. I think some people thought it might have come in a little high, given that he was making $800,000 on his previous contract. But when you perform at the level that he does, and if you're the Canucks, you're buying up some UFA years. I mean, you're getting Garland locked in from, what, age 25 to 30. So theoretically, his peak years. You can expect Garland, especially in the front end of the contract, to probably maybe have career numbers in Vancouver. I think it's a fair thing to say, given that he's going to be playing in a pretty elevated role. I think he's going to get a lot of opportunities with elite skill guys. It's a good situation for him. We've got Connor Garland speaking about the
wonder,
contract.
Where's he going to be on the power play?
Good question.
Might not be PP1.
No. He's got the tape that I've looked at, the film that I've looked at in the room eating tape. You see the highlights of the goals that he scored, right? He's got nice hands in front of the net, right? So I could see him doing that sort of net front, maybe bumper type role, but that's Horvat's spot.
The Canucks' second power play unit needs to get better. I don't even think it existed. last year.
Right. It didn't really.
It was kind of like, and here are some guys to kill the final 40 seconds. lots more to come on the Halford and Brough show this morning in this hour. We've got an open segment, no guest in the next segment. Chris Johnston is going to join us at 7. In the next segment, we'll look ahead today to today and kind of tick off all the things the Canucks need. It's part of our poll question. We're also going to go into the Dunbar Lumber text line because there's a lot of texts from listeners today, and I want to get to those early in the show. It is the Halford and Brough show on Sportsnet 650. Come on!
.31 on a Wednesday, also known as Free Agent Frenzy Day here at Sportsnet 650. You're listening to Halford and Brough. Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today. Visit your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. If you happen to be in downtown Vancouver, I highly recommend checking out Burrard Acura at 730 Terminal Avenue.
So in the last segment, in case you're just joining us on the Halford and Brough show, we were talking about offer sheets and the potential for Elias Pettersson to sign one.
Now, why are we talking about that, Jason?
We're talking about that because according to Thomas Drantz and Rick Dhaliwal, the Canucks are a little bit concerned about it.
Mm-hmm. Elliot Friedman as well.
Yeah, and there's one, he's dialed in.
He's also concerned about it.
I don't think he's concerned about it.
Reported the concern.
He would love to see it. As an insider, the Canucks cleared a bunch of cap space in large part to improve the team and to change the mix of the team, but also as a somewhat of a defensive mechanism just in case Pettersson signs an offer sheet. So we threw it out to the listeners. How would you feel if Pettersson did that, if he did decide to sign an offer sheet? Because, again, it's not just offer sheets aren't signed. It's not like a game of tag where a team comes up and goes, here's an offer sheet, Pettersson. He hasn't been in sign an offer sheet. Like, he still has to make the decision to sign that.
Correct.
And by signing that, he could, in theory, put the Canucks in a tough situation because right. He could sign a long-term contract and his cap hit is way up. It's not what the Canucks have budgeted for. And then they're like, oh, we got to shed more salary because we still got to sign Quinn Hughes, too. Lots of different opinions into the Dunbar Lumber text line. 650, 650. It is the smart alternative. Visit Dunbar Lumber on Bridge Street in Ladner or Butison, Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. The stick man comes out swinging with his stick, I imagine.
Yep.
I'm done with Pettersson if he does that to us. I'd rather have Eichel.
Oh, man.
Terry and Langley. It would affect my opinion of Benning. If that's even possible, if the worst GM in the league runs out of time with the franchise player, that's epic incompetence. Hayden from CR, Campbell River, or Costa Rica.
Who's to say?
If Pettersson did get offer sheeted, do you think JB should take the draft picks? For 4 first-round picks is huge value. We could get a ton of good players from trading the picks. I think it would just be so complicated that they'd be like, no, we're going to match.
There's no way. Not with everything that's invested into this season. It would be such a negative move in terms of what you want to accomplish this year about getting back into the playoffs. Now, I will say this. There's probably only a handful of NHL clubs that would have the draft capital and available cap space to pull off something that would make the Canucks sweat. Because remember, we talked about the Aho offer sheet in Carolina. That basically did the negotiations for Tom Dundon and Don Waddell in Carolina. They're like, well, this makes things a lot easier. We don't have to spend the entire summer hammering this thing out.
Perfect.
We'll just we will just match the offer sheet and then get on with our summer and go to the cabin. Seattle theoretically could do it. And I understand that everyone likes the nice syrupy narrative of what a better way to kick off the Pacific Northwest rivalry than by Seattle putting a knife into their neighbors from the north. Again, that would be a massive, massively bold play by Seattle, but it would also ruin them in terms of building a, you know, draftable prospect cupboard. There'd be nothing there.
Trey and Victoria, don't care. I don't care if Petey signs an offer sheet. He's got to do what's best for him and get the most money for himself. Canucks are going to match regardless. Do we agree with that?
that every player now has got to get the most money for himself, because that's not what the Canucks were doing when they were in their Stanley Cup window.
They were also they were in a flat cap in a pandemic.
Okay, but they were decidedly doing quite the opposite, actually. Mm-hmm. And Ryan Kessler came out and said, like, listen, if we want to have a chance to win a Stanley Cup, we're going to have take the team into consideration. We've seen the challenges
coming from him, but yeah.
But he did do it.
Yeah, but then he took off.
Because he wanted to win a Stanley Cup?
He wanted to get his paper, too. Let's not forget
about
that.
No, I think he wanted to win a Stanley Cup.
Because he got a real big deal in Anaheim.
Okay. But the Sedins were on board with that.
Okay.
I'm just saying. Well, I don't know why you're pushing back on this.
Because it's a discussion. I think the whole crux of this thing is, do you take a modified contract or less to keep the team together, or do you go and chase your paper and get as much money as you can while you can get
paper?
I like saying
you're
chase
not
your
that
paper.
Hip.
I am.
You're
that
just
hip.
Not.
I am.
You're not. Let's move on to what the Canucks need to do today in free agency.
Yes,
a lot of players going to be chasing the paper out there.
There you go.
Sounds like they're like a dog going after the newspaper.
Yeah, I don't think
they're trying to secure the bag.
Yes, that's right. You want to use secure the bag?
Bank or bag?
Bag. B-A-G, yeah.
No.
Do dogs still fetch newspapers? I feel like that's a very archaic reference.
Yeah, go get my phone.
Dog just chewing through your iPhone.
Poll question today is an absolute slam dunk. I'm a little embarrassed by this poll question, but I think it just underscores how badly the Canucks need a right shot defenseman, because the question is, what's the Canucks' biggest need in free agency? And we came up with four options, all good ones, I think. A right shot defenseman, a backup goalie, another center, fourth line center, but yeah. The Canucks need center depth, more of it. Or finally, just a scoring winger. And Drance's talked about that. You know, they might be after another winger, because I don't know if you guys know this, but sometimes the Canucks run into injury issues.
What?
Yeah. So the lineup you put up right now might change.
It might.
Especially in an Olympic year where all the games are going to be packed in even more tightly. 89% of you, by the way, have voted for right shot defenseman.
Seriously? It's that high?
89% of you. 6.7% say backup goalie. 3% say scoring winger. And just over 1% say another center. That center, by the way, could be Brandon Sutter.
How many votes will be. How many votes so far?
Almost 900.
Good Lord. That's very overwhelming.
It's decisive. Okay. So I don't know who it's going to be. When people talk about Luke Shen, I gladly welcome a Luke Shen contract, especially if it's below $1 million. And the reports, most people have it pegged at a 2-year deal, cap hit of $800,000. Luke Shen is a great depth defenseman that can play on your bottom pairing if need be. And his contract, if need be, and his cap hit, entire cap hit, can also be buried in the minors if need be. The Canucks need more than Luke Shen on the right side. They just traded away Nate Schmidt. They need a legitimate top four right side defenseman, because all they've got right now is Tyler Myers, and a lot of people aren't too excited about him anyway.
So right now, a lot of people are texting in and they're saying, can you guys kind of paint an overall picture of what the Canucks have available to spend today and what they need to get out of today in terms of players on the active roster? That's fair, because there is a lot of moving parts. So if you were to go to one of the cap websites, Cap Friendly, and you'd see that the Canucks have a lot of cap space. But remember, they have to allot a significant amount of that for whatever Pettersson and Hughes are going to get paid. So the guys at The Athletic went through the exercise. They kind of put in placeholder salary ideas for what Hughes and Pettersson might get. So again, this is all estimates, but essentially, if you want to boil it down and have some reasonably close figures, the Canucks have about $8 to $9 million to spend today to get a backup goalie, to get a couple of defensemen, and then maybe to get a fourth line center, maybe a scoring winger. So it's not a ton of cash, but remember, the market is flooded with guys that are now looking for jobs. So some updates to throw your way on what the holes to be filled might look like. We talked about Yaroslav Halak potentially as a backup netminder. It'll be really interesting to see what kind of money he comes in at. There was a report overnight from Murph that it sounds as though that the Canucks are reasonably close to maybe bringing Brandon Sutter back.
Yeah.
After it was initially reported by Dhaliwal that Sutter seemed like he was on the way out. That's how quickly things can change in a sort of fluid situation.
And depending on the price, I'm perfectly fine with that. Brandon Sutter as your fourth line center or maybe an option on the wing on the fourth line is fine if his value is like $1 million.
He would be a good versatile fourth liner. Because he can bounce to the outside and then play back in the middle if need be.
He can win faceoffs. He's a good penalty killer. Remember, there's no more Jay Beagle for the penalty kill. So right now you're looking at a situation where maybe your penalty killing centers are Jason Dickinson and Brandon Sutter. Mm-hmm. And then Tyler Mott is there. And maybe you would have JT Miller out there also because he's a good faceoff man and Dickinson isn't.
Yes.
But when they traded Beagle, as much as Beagle was overpaid, his contract wasn't very good, and it was a good thing that they did trade him and got rid of that final year of his contract, they need to fill that spot.
Right, and I think that's what Sutter might end up being if the deal does get done. Now, remember, with a lot of these veteran guys, maybe not necessarily Halak, but some other ones, Luke Shen, for example, you might see the Canucks give a second year of term because that allows them to spread out the cap hit, maybe defer whatever to the second year, be it more salary or what have you. It also gives some of these veteran guys a little bit more security because a lot of these guys don't want to keep moving year to year to year to different organizations. Like there's a few guys that have a sort of handshake agreement that will keep going year to year on contracts with the same organization, but there's a lot of guys that are floating around in the ether. There's another one going around that Brad Hunt, who's a veteran offensive defenseman that's kicked around the NHL, spent some time in Minnesota, spent some time in Vegas, might end up playing for the Canucks and sign as a Luke Shen-esque depth defenseman. He's a Maple Ridge guy, so he could be an Abbotsford
needs players too.
Right, so that could be something to keep an eye on today as well. So guys like Halak, Sutter, Hunt, those are all options that are on the table.
What about the top four option? I think that's going to be the toughest one to fill, obviously.
Yeah.
David Savard, I think, is going to be too expensive. That's the one a lot of people have been excited about. I cannot tell you how many texts we've got in about Yanni Hakanpaa.
Love a Hakanpaa text.
Who played for the Carolina Hurricanes and the Anaheim Ducks last season. He is, in theory, what Jim Benning has said he wants. He's a big boy. He hits. Which way does he shoot? Whatever. I think it's right.
Doesn't matter.
But this is what happens when you have to pick through the scraps.
Right. That's exactly what they're going to have to do.
With limited cap space. And then you're like, all right, go play a top four role. I would not be surprised at all if they just circled back and got a deal done with Travis Hamonic.
Top four Hamonic.
Well, Hamonic showed that he can be on a pair with Quinn Hughes, right? So that's important. So if you were to bring back Hamonic, you could have Hughes with Hamonic, Ekman-Larsson with Tyler Myers. Now, your third pair could be on the left side, it could be Rathbone or it could be Ulevi. On the right side, it could be Luke Shen. And then probably you'd want another option there.
You'd need another guy, without question. You'd almost want to
have... Just for injuries.
You'd almost want to have eight NHL defensemen at the ready. Because as you mentioned, these lineups that we're all doing on paper, they look great. But the reality is it's very difficult to keep something like that intact for a long stretch over. As you astutely pointed out, an NHL campaign where guys aren't going to have a very long offseason, where there's going to be an Olympic break, conceivably where a lot of guys will be, you know, at the Olympics. And there's a lot of hockey played over the last 18 months compressed into a short period of time.
In the next segment, we'll go over the NHL stories, the big NHL stories league-wide from yesterday. And then at 7 o'clock, Sportsnet insider Chris Johnston will join us, talk about the threat of an Elias Pettersson offer sheet, what he's looking at today in terms of the big moves and what's already been done. It's Alfred and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650.
Not having monthly fees means no monthly fee increases. Switch to a Simply Financial no-fee checking account and earn $200. Conditions apply. Visit simply.com.
$6.49 on a Wednesday. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. It is Free Agent Frenzy Day. We, of course, are waiting for the frenzy to kick off. There was a lot that happened yesterday. We went over everything from the Canucks, in case you missed it. Connor Garland, newly acquired, signs his extension, as expected. Nate Schmidt traded to Winnipeg for a third-round pick. Winnipeg initially made overtures for Schmidt. They tried to get him to go there at first. He said, no, you're on my no-trade list. I'm not going to Winnipeg. Then he relented. Now he's in Winnipeg.
Yeah. What else happened?
And then, of course, Braden Holtby bought out of his contract. So those were the three big moves from the Canucks. Lots to see what happens today. In and around the NHL, I guess the big one yesterday was the Alex Ovechkin extension in Washington.
5-year extension, and all of a sudden you're starting to do the math on what he would need to break Wayne Gretzky's goal-scoring record.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's around 164 goals
away. He's exactly 164 back of Wayne Gretzky.
So 164 goals, so he's going to need to do what, like just over a 30-goal pace on average?
30, if you average it out, assuming he can stay at it. I think some people are looking into this the wrong way, but he would need to average 33 goals a season over the 5 years of the contract.
Mm.
The contract runs him from age 35 right up until he turns 40. So if you're thinking about it logically, you're going to say, well, he's probably not going to score 33 goals every year. I don't remember the last time a 40-year-old scored 33 goals. But if he gets a lot of them in the early part of the contract.
If he breaks Gretzky's record, I will eat the most crow I have ever eaten when it comes to sports opinions. Because 7-8 years ago, remember when Ovi's goal scoring fell to like he was scoring in the 30s?
Yes.
And people were like, I wonder if he can still do it. I was like, there is no way he's going to be... he's going to break that record. He's not even going to come close.
Mm-hmm.
Then he has this resurgence, which also I think came alongside scoring in the NHL, just in general going up.
Yes.
Scoring went up, and Ovi didn't slow down. He was still at his spot on the power play, hammering home pucks. I hope he gets close.
Yeah, it makes it an interesting chase. I think that would be great.
I still think it's more likely that he doesn't break this record than he does. That being said, I still consider him the greatest goal scorer of all time. I consider him a greater goal scorer than Wayne Gretzky because of the eras.
Yeah, and that's the thing is I know that I remember you saying that there's no chance that Ovechkin ever breaks this record, but that was a long time ago. More recently, you've kind of come around and acknowledged that he's the greatest goal scorer in NHL history. And I agree with you. I think when you look at the era in which he did it, and really the ways in which he's done it, I think that's really remarkable too. Because it's not like he's surprising anybody with anything. Everyone knows exactly what Ovechkin wants to do.
Can you think of anyone who's earned their contract more than Ovi?
Well, you know, it's a funny thing. We talked about, have any of these gargantuan 13, 14, 15-year deals ever worked out?
Ovi's.
It was a great deal. You look at what he gave them over the life of that contract at $9.5 million per. When he signed that contract, people were like gobsmacked, jaw-dropper, because it was such a huge amount of money. And everyone said, wait till the end of that contract. No one thought that he would be doing this at 35, but he made that contract look like a savvy investment from Ted Leonsis.
Well, yeah, when I say earned that contract, look, I know there have been some great players along the way, and I'm not trying to turn this into a debate. It was more just a turn of phrase. Sid has obviously earned his contract.
Yeah.
But Ovi came to a franchise that was completely in the dumps. Washington was an afterthought. I always talk about that Stanley Cup final where they played Detroit and they got swept by Detroit and Detroit clinched in Washington and the rink was half full of Red Wings fans. Like that's how long ago it was, but the Capitals brand had completely fallen off in Washington. They get Ovechkin, and it all starts to turn around. And what an exciting story it was, too. Like, what a great soap opera it was in Washington. We were talking earlier about Jaro Halak, who could be coming to the Vancouver Canucks as their backup goalie.
Yeah.
Jaro Halak essentially caused the Washington Capitals to question everything about their strategy and their franchise.
Yep.
They went through all these different coaches and they're like, okay, well, we can't run and gun anymore. We're going to have to play more defensive. Whoop, wait a minute. We've gone too far the other way. Now Jay Beagle is playing more than Alex Ovechkin, and that's not smart. And then finally, when it looked like, frankly, the window had closed shut on the Capitals, then they win the Stanley Cup. It really is amazing. And however much Ovi has earned on his contract, Ted Leonsis Leonsis has made way more on franchise value that is almost directly attributable to Alex Ovechkin.
Yeah, just to put a bow on that one, you could say that back in the, you know, 80s and 90s when you were alluding to that time where the Caps were kind of irrelevant, there would be no Washington Capital on the Mount Rushmore of great Washington, D.C. athletes. And now it's Ovechkin with a bullet. He's up there. He's up there with the greatest Washington football team players of all time, Washington Bullets, whatever sport in the district, he's there. He's an iconic member, not just of the hockey team, but that sports market, which is really saying something for an organization that wasn't that great. Not as big of a re-upping, but close. Gabriel Landeskog in Colorado. They went down to the mattress with this one, and they finally got it done late last night. And the early indication is that Colorado finally relented, and Landeskog got what he wanted, which was 8 years in term at $7 million per, so $56 million in pocket for a 29-year-old who is the captain, who is a hell of a player. But if you look at Colorado, who are the most important players on that team? I would say Makar, McKinnon, Rantanen because of the youth.
I think Landeskog's pretty darn important,
so he's
too.
But he's probably the fourth most important guy on that team.
But now the Avs are in the better win a cup camp. In fact, of all the teams heading into next season, they might be the one where you're kind of like, you guys better win soon.
Right. And are they going to win with Philip Grubauer in net? Because the Vezina-nominated goalie now certainly looks like he's on the outside looking in, at least financially. The days of Colorado having tons of cap space and all these good young players, that's done. They loaded up on everybody, and they had to. It's what happens. Ask the Tampa Bay Lightning. When you have good young players that have success in the NHL, you got to pay them if you want to keep them, and that's what Colorado has done with the contract to Makar, of course, the contract for Rantanen, now for Landeskog, who's not particularly young, but he is now getting paid for an awfully long time.
Chris Johnston is coming up on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Find long weekend deals only available at BC Liquor Stores. Save $3 on Remix Vodka Soda and pick up the 12-can mixer pack for $20.99. Please enjoy responsibly.